The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Okay, Tov, Shavua Tov. Yeah, it feels like a long time since we last spoke with all the events that have been happening. It seems to have been a very busy weekend with Yom HaTzma'ut. Of course, the mandatory rocket fire from Gaza. Two nights in a row, missiles were fired from Gaza. Fortunately, there were no injuries, no deaths. The IDF continues its policy of not allowing any single attack on Israeli soil or towards Israeli soil to go unanswered. There were responses from the IDF in Gaza. It's kind of a bit of a dance. I mean, the response was such that it won't actually escalate the situation. So therefore, it's a very limited response. It's quite pinpointed. It doesn't solicit any further action. So it's left at that point. Until the next time around when someone feels that they need to make a statement. Of course, Yom HaTzma'ut is also known as Nakba Day, the day of the disaster, effectively. Just to add for people who don't follow history very closely and don't understand, but just the point that might be worth making is that if the Arab nations had accepted the Palestine partition plan in 1947, then they would have received then all that they are demanding today. So it just took
amazing
a word of yes to say, yes, we'll accept it. But they felt that that would be a compromise because they had the idea that they would be able to get a little bit more than that. Now they would be delighted to go back to receive what originally was on the table, was offered to them on a silver platter. So it's interesting just to see things in retrospect. Of course, back in 1947, there was no Palestinian people the way that we see them today. The offer was being made to the Arab nations in the form of Jordan and Egypt predominantly, who both decided that they don't want to accept the offer, tried to go to war with Israel in order to grab not only what they'd been offered, but even more than that. They failed. The rest, as they say, is history. Now they would be delighted to get, apparently, if we believe the rhetoric, they would be delighted to get what they were offered then. So that was, you know, in the shadow of Yom HaTzma'ut. Of course, we now move forward to further holidays. We'll be celebrating like Bar Omer next week and Yom Yerushalayim soon after that. And then, of course, straight into Shavuot. So it's quite a busy time over this period of time. And if people think that we're not going to talk about Iran, then I'm just going to mention that Iran is very much in the news. We're not going to talk much about it today. But of course, there was that death of the deputy commander of the Quds force of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, apparently died of a heart condition. So it seems to be very natural, very understood. No controversy surrounding this particular death. But of course, still lots of talk about the fact that, that Natanz, nuclear reactor facility was so badly damaged. And yet, in spite of that, Iran seems to have moved very quickly to the 60% enrichment level of its uranium. And now, the newspapers are full of the fact that the Israeli government seems to understand that the U.S. wants to rejoin the Iranian nuclear deal almost at any price, which is of concern. But we've got a lot of other things to talk about.
Absolutely unbelievable how much news there is this weekend. All right, let's just talk about the disturbances that took place yesterday, both in Jerusalem and Jaffa. What was this all about?
So the two clashes that took place, one in Jerusalem and one in Jaffa yesterday, seem to be unrelated to each other. The issue in Jerusalem is very, very local. Of course, we're in the Muslim holy month of Ramadan right now, Ramadan Karim to all our Muslim listeners as well. And it is traditional during the month of Ramadan for Muslims to go to the Temple Mount to pray, especially in the evening hours when the fast ends after the iftar. Many of them go to the Temple Mount to pray. And there is a tradition that on their way back from prayer, many of them use the Damascus Gate entrance to the Old City for their path to and from the Temple Mount to the Al-Aqsa. And it is traditional for many of them to gather around the area of the Damascus Gate and to actually sit on the stairs, which are surrounding the area of the Damascus Gate. Now, the Jerusalem police have decided this year that they are not going to allow Muslim youth to gather around the area of the Damascus Gate for fear of the fact that it might lead to disturbances in that area. And so they have been trying to force the youth to move on from that area on their return from Al-Aqsa, from the worship at Al-Aqsa. They've been trying to encourage people simply to move on and not to gather in that area around the Damascus Gate. And this particular act seems to have caused the disturbance. So in trying to avoid any disturbances, it seems as if though a disturbance was actually created. And in fact, the police had to even have a water cannon or some water cannons and mounted police out yesterday to disperse a crowd. This was already the fifth day of clashes over restrictions. Some people are wondering whether the restrictions are relating to coronavirus or not, and the newspapers have been unclear about whether the idea of not allowing people to gather is somehow related to coronavirus. It's worth mentioning that as of yesterday, Israelis are now not required to wear masks outdoors at all as a result of the massive improvement in the coronavirus situation. So I'm not quite sure whether it's related to coronavirus. I think it's more just to do with preventing youths from gathering there in order to try to avoid disturbances, and in so doing, creating a disturbance out of the situation. Mm. Water cannons came out and the mounted police were there. Stun grenades apparently were used. Three people, we understand, were arrested, having been accused of trying to attack police officers at the site. There were even reports of some people being injured and needing medical treatment. I think it all ended pretty much okay. That was the situation in Jerusalem. In Jaffa, an entirely different situation. There was some quite disturbing footage of a yeshiva leader in Jaffa being attacked by people in the street and beaten up quite badly. Fortunately, he seems to have been okay after the attack. And the speculation is that this seems somehow to be related to the fact that this rabbi who heads up this yeshiva was actually looking for some more property to acquire in order to expand his yeshiva, and that there might be some controversy or some disagreement over the property that he's seeking out. Some Arab neighbors of the area attacked him for the fear of the fact that that particular property might be taken over by yeshiva. So this is a classic Jaffa situation, unfortunately, where there are still lots and lots of tensions between Arab and Jewish and people who live within the Jaffa area. And I'm not quite sure exactly what the current situation is with regard to whether the yeshiva will in fact expand itself into that property. But I would imagine that it's kind of a free and democratic society. And if a property is available and if the owner and the buyer come to an agreement, or if they want to rent it, come to an agreement that the neighbors of the area really don't have the right to intervene in that particular transaction unless the municipality says that for whatever reason the acquisition is being used for unlawful purposes or purposes that are not allowed as part of the city. So it's a little unfortunate that people are deciding to take things into their own hands in the city of Jaffa. And as much as there is Jewish coexistence between between Jews and Arabs in the city of Jaffa, yet there still remains an underlying tension which we can never really be allowed to forget, unfortunately.
Yeah, all of this says to me that the pandemic is over in Israel. These stories really are so 2019, aren't they? Clashes in Jerusalem, fighting over whether a yeshiva should be expanded in Jaffa. It's really back to things that's pretty sad that we're fighting about. Almost like we've learned nothing.
I think the lessons of the last 73 years show, unfortunately, that some lessons just are very, very difficult to learn. Yes, I mean, to some degree, we are returning back to things that we used to worry about before there was a pandemic, returning back to behavior that was in place before the pandemic arose. I think that this is kind of a post-pandemic situation now, where things will get back to some semblance of usual, I don't want to call it normal, because I think that some of these things are really not normal, but usual for sure. People do feel, I think there is a certain understanding or a certain feeling that the pandemic is over. Schools are now back to full operation without any restrictions, without any of the capsules that were in place, even though obviously the school students, very few of them have actually been vaccinated, and there's still a move towards trying at least to vaccinate the 12 to 16-year-olds as soon as the FDA approves the vaccine for that particular age group. So there is certainly a feeling that the pandemic is over. And when you see activities in hotels and in holiday resorts and, public places, you will just not even believe that there was a pandemic here. In fact, we were just saying yesterday that there's almost like a parallel existence that we feel at the moment, with Israel really moving forward in a post-pandemic situation, while Europe and other countries, South Africa, the United States, still suffering very much from the pandemic, from restrictions, from lockdown, from fighting to try to get vaccines, things like that. Those kind of issues are really not on the agenda in Israel anymore.
Absolutely, I mean, absolutely incredible. Well done to Israel for the way in which it handled it. Israel and Greece have signed a 5 billion shekel defense procurement deal. Tell us about this.
So this is a part of a whole series of cooperation exercises, events that have taken place between Israel and not only Greece, but indeed including Cyprus as well, and even the United Arab Emirates over the past few days. And I would simply say that these are actions which are taking place in order to strengthen those countries against the possible threat that Turkey presents in this particular region. That's the best, my best understanding of it, even though it might not have been, said like that in simple words, but that's my interpretation of the situation. On the one hand, we have Israel signing this 5 billion shekel defense deal, in terms of which Israel will help Greece to set up flight training facilities for the Greek force. And Israeli companies are going to be involved in helping the Greek Air Force to update their Air Force training facilities. And this is a deal that's apparently going to last over a period of 22 years. So this is some real close cooperation between the Air Force of Greece and the International Flight Training Center that they have there, and the Israeli Air Force and Israeli companies who provide equipment and training and facilities to make it look almost like the training facilities that the Israeli Air Force have. So that's a massive upgrade for the Greek Air Force, and very, very close cooperation, not only for the two air forces, but indeed for Israeli commercial ventures as well, who will be involved in that. Then we have the Israeli Air Force taking place in an exercise which started yesterday in Greece. The exercise, we understand, will include dozens of aircraft, in which the Israeli Air Force will participate alongside several other partnering nations. This is designed apparently to strengthen cooperation between those participating in this exercise and to sustain high quality training between the various participants. A whole host of Israeli aircraft will be involved in this exercise taking place in Greece. And then in a further event that's taken place in the region, there was a meeting in Cyprus between the foreign ministers of Greece, Cyprus, and the United Arab Emirates. Who would have dreamt that the United Arab Emirates would be involved in a meeting like that a few years ago? But such is the situation now, where those countries have come together. And as I said before, I think the underlying text here, the subtext in all of these meetings and all of these activities, is really somehow to present a more united force against the threat that Turkey presents. There is a lot of tension over the gas fields. There is a lot of tension over Turkey's closer relationships with Iran, potentially with Russia as well. The issues that are going on between Turkey and the United States, Turkey trying to grab a much, much stronger strategic position in this particular Mediterranean area. And so now we see other countries coming up and cooperating with each other in order somehow to weaken the attempts by Turkey to expand and strengthen their position. I think this is going to be a very, very interesting period of time in which we see these countries coming together to try somehow to contradict the strength that Turkey is showing. Who knows where it will all land up, but it's certainly going to be interesting to watch.
Indeed it is. We'll continue tomorrow morning, Anthony, with many of the other stories that we wanted to talk about. It's just gone 8 o'clock. We'll catch you then. Thank you, as always.